Blog Talk Radio.
Lugnuts are one out away. Weimer checks on the runner at first. Deal.
Ground ball stroke to second baseman Talley. He snatches it up, goes to first, and this ball game is over, and so is the 2019 season. The Lansing Lugnuts defeat the Fort Wayne Tin Caps 3-1. Sean Weimer tosses a 9-inning complete game. The Lugnuts explode out of the third base side dugout, and they are all around their pitcher, Weimer. And then after that, into the handshake line. The Lugnuts close out 2019 with a 36-34 record in the second half and a 68-71 record for the year. Fort Wayne, meanwhile, falls to 29-41 here in the second half and 62-76 for the season. Sean Weimer, a 9-inning complete game, a 3-1 Lugnuts victory to put the stamp on the 24th season of Lugnuts baseball.
And now I welcome you in to the final Around the Nest of 2019. That was the way that the Lansing Lugnuts season ended, on a 9-inning complete game by Sean Weimer in 2 hours and 14 minutes, and he only needed 85 pitches to get there. On this final Around the Nest, you're going to hear from the entire organization: Jim Tarabocchia in Dunedin, Rob Fay in Vancouver, Zach Helton in Bluefield, Tyler Murray in New Hampshire, Pat Mollicaro in Buffalo, and Adam Jackson in Lansing. You'll also hear from two of the standout performers this year, from Jackson Reese, whom Jim Tarabocchia interviewed in Dunedin, and what a spectacular season he had between Lansing and Dunedin, and from Griffin Conine, who turned on the power in Lansing and led the league with 22 home runs and not all that many games either. We begin this week, our final week of 2019, the season finale, with Jim Tarabocchia of the Dunedin Blue Jays. Jim, you ready one final time?
Yes, sir, I am, Jesse. How's it going?
Going good. When you look back upon 2019, what sticks with you?
Well, I think, unfortunately, it's part of it is what would have been type deal. With our bullpen, what we had there at the end of the season, to our offense and how dangerous that was at the end of the year, with guys maybe coming to help us out for the possible postseason. I think that's something that not having a postseason certainly sticks out, unfortunately, as a sore thumb that in fact is really affected a lot of people within our office here in Dunedin. And unfortunately, it's something that just won't go away. We hope it does, and we hope that, but it's a painful thing that we weren't able to see the whole season out and what would happen. Now, I think also what sticks out, though, is simply the guy's ability this year to bounce back from tough losses, bouncing back from playing two doubleheaders in a row. I think it's the resiliency overall of this ball club this year that I had the opportunity to watch and to interact with all season long that I'm truly thankful for. I'm very happy for Cesar Martin that he got the chance to manage this ball club, and unfortunately didn't get to see it all the way through, but did a great job this year with everything in managing this team. And I think just hats off to the entire ball club and what this team consisted of. For me, I always tell people now when they ask how the season went, I said there wasn't a day that went by that I didn't chuckle or I didn't laugh. I mean, one of these guys, whether it be the coaches or the players, whoever, high-performance staff, Matty Van Romer, our video coordinator, it doesn't really matter. Because I didn't go a day without having a smile on my face or getting a chance to laugh. So overall, I think the whole season really sticks out for the challenges that were placed upon us, but how we were able to answer those challenges and continue to push forward and win ball games.
Who would you name your position player and your pitcher of the year for the DJs?
Well, I think first, looking at pitcher of the year, that goes to Maximo Castillo, who I told somebody I think is going to be a surefire major leaguer when it's all said and done. I think he's going to carve out a nice major league career. Ever since late June, where he gave up 7 earned runs in a start against Daytona, where he ultimately was able to pick up that victory that night because the offense bailed him out. He was virtually unhittable. He had the only immaculate inning this year as well for the Blue Jays, and actually the only immaculate inning that I've seen in my time here in Dunedin in the past 3 years. So I think Maximo Castillo for me is the easy choice there for being the pitcher of the year. And I think a variety of guys contributed offensively to be the kind of the position player of the year. I think there, you know, you can throw in Cullen Large in there and Alejandro Kirk as well. I think Ryan Noda showed his value analytically, but also with his ability to get on base, led the league in walks, led the league in on base percentage, was able to come around to score a lot. Cal Stevenson certainly no longer with the organization, but held that hitting streak. So for me personally, I think there's a variety of guys that that stick out offensively. I don't think it's tough to really just kind of describe everything that they've done this year, but and just give it to one guy. So I think it's a good collective group of guys right there that I just mentioned that helped push this team to 80 wins this year offensively.
With Jim Tarabocchia wrapping things up from the advanced Dunedin Blue Jays season, were there any fun stories? Anything that over the course of a long year, anything, any moments that really stood out to you that you'll remember for a while?
Well, as sometimes as horrible as it was, the rain delays, sometimes going down to the clubhouse, watching the guys play video games and cards and just talking things over with Jake McGuigan and Matt Van Romer and sitting in the coach's office as they kind of, you know, were shooting the breeze. Those are things that stick out to me this season and make the season at times, which can be an absolute grind, you know that, which make it very, very fun and it separates what we do from everything else, what everybody else does, because we can have those laughs. And sometimes there's that downtime of the rain delays and whatnot and time to talk about whatever, about life, about baseball. I remember having a conversation with Cal Stevenson in Tampa during a rain delay. We were sitting there. It was in the dugout, myself and Jake McGuigan, and Matt was there, Van Romer, and then Cal was there as well. And, you know, we were talking about the weather in Florida and how bad it's been and all the rain and whatnot. And Cal, I asked him, because we got on the subject of California, and he asked me, you know, would you ever move to California? I said, no, I'm afraid of that, you know, big earthquake that's supposed to hit, supposedly. And, you know, I'm just not a big, you know, earthquake kind of guy, I guess. And he said to me, yeah, California in 10 years is probably going to fall off the United States and just into the ocean. So jokingly, of course. It's just some of those things that, you know, you make you chuckle, you look back on and getting to know these guys. So I think during those rain delays, as bad as they were at times and how frustrating they were, especially knowing that, oh, man, we have another doubleheader coming up. The next day, there was still some positive that came out of that as well.
And then finally, Jim, name one guy you can't wait to see what they do in 2020.
You know, again, that, for me, it's a tough question because there are a lot of guys. I root for all our guys, whoever comes through here every single year. You know, I think if you break it down, there are guys, say, like Simeon Woods Richardson, who I'm excited to see next year and what he does, you know, whether it be at the advanced A level or higher levels. He really impressed me a lot in his short time here. I'm interested to see how Ryan Noda does. He's really showed his value this year at the plate, but also in the field, where he was very solid in the outfield and obviously very good at first base as well. Kevin Vicuña, another guy who I'm interested to see where he ends up and where he lands. I think he's as good a fielder as they come, and as slick as they come defensively. Cullen Large is another guy. Alejandro Kirk. I mean, these are all guys who, as I mentioned, were the core of this team this year, that I'm interested to see how their careers pan out and how they do at the next level, because of the skills that they possess and the upside they have as well. So I'm really looking forward to them offensively. And I think pitching-wise, like I said, with Simeon, but also, you know, Maximo Castillo is a big one for me. You know, he's 20 years old. As I mentioned before, he's got a lot of mileage on his arm, a lot of innings thrown in his professional career. He really grew up this year as a pitcher and starts to understand now how to pitch to guys, how to get guys out. When all of his pitches are working, man, he's virtually, he was virtually the last 2 months of the year, virtually unhittable. And I'm looking forward to seeing how his career pans out. And selfishly, of course, like as I predicted with Bo a couple of years ago, I'm talking about how he could be, out of all the great prospects that were coming up through the system, how he could be the top guy, even ahead of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., both different players, both great in their own right. But I always said Bo would be the catalyst and kind of the figurehead of the turnaround of the Toronto Blue Jays organization. And so far that's kind of panning out and selfish reasons, as I said, and I'm happy to see that for selfish reasons. But, for same premise here with Maximo Castillo, I've said it before. I think he can be a number three starter. Somebody disagreed with me on that. Fine. You disagree all you want. I've seen him every start. He's young, 20 years old. Okay. I think he's eventually going to be a number three starter and be very successful at the major league level, if not that, number four starter. And what I saw this year from him at such a young age, I'm very impressed. And I'll continue to root for his success, not just for me, obviously, my reasons, but just because I like him as a person as well and as a pitcher. And I think he can really help the organization for many years to come as a very good right-handed starting pitcher in the rotation. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next with Maximo Castillo.
Jim Terabocchio, the voice of the Dunedin Blue Jays, the man who gave us the lowdown on the DJs all year. Jim, thank you very much.
All right, Jesse, great year. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
You have a great offseason. At Jim Terra on Twitter, and from Jim, let's go down to Rob Fay in Vancouver, the voice of the Seas. Rob, what was the story of the 2019 Vancouver Canadian season?
The story of this season was the team that just couldn't get above 500. Good afternoon, Jesse. We had five different opportunities to get above 500, and we would proceed to lose all five of those next games. And it really was, to use a football adage, just a season of trying to get back to the line of scrimmage. And it was just something the Canadians could never do, spun their tires in the mud. And that, through 76 games, is probably the simplest takeaway.
Let's name a player and a pitcher of the year. Who's your top position player and pitcher of 2019?
Well, I think positionally I would have gone with Yorman Rodriguez, and that was even before he went to Lansing. He still finished amongst all of our category leaders offensively and only played essentially two-thirds of the season in Vancouver. It was really something unique to see a player that used to be all or nothing, a guy that was always swinging for the fences, that really rejigged his swings and broke his mechanics down to level one and started to work his way back up. To see his progression throughout the first, I think it was 50 games that we had him for, was extraordinary. And then to see that he continued to hit the baseball in Lansing just really solidified for me that he was a guy that was just destined to have a great season. And I don't think there was anybody around him that exceeded what he was able to accomplish in 2019. From a pitching perspective, you could actually go a couple of different ways. Of course, everybody wanted to see Adam Klofenstein. He was named the team MVP by the Vancouver Canadiens, the best overall player in our organization this year, and rightly so. He had numbers in all the right categories, finished the season with a 1.96 ERA, or at least post-All-Star break. He really started to just spike that thing down. 23 strikeouts, 4 walks, and just a leader in this organization all the way through. So you could have honorable mention for Luis Quiñones, who was a late-round guy out of San Jacinto Community College. Alec Manoah, I don't think he had a big enough body of work, no pun intended, but really King Claw for me was the goal ticket.
Rob, what was, let's say, the most memorable moment from your season, on or off the field?
You know, I'm actually going to tie this into two things here. The relationship between Alec Manoah and Adam Klofenstein is one that I hope the Blue Jays take notice of. And they might not get to see it until spring training the next year. Hopefully Casey was able to put it into his game reports a couple of times. That's a tandem that I would try to keep together. Now, I know the college kid as opposed to the high school kid are on two different trajectories, and maybe the combination of Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro in this organization wants to get Alec up there as quickly as possible. But the way that these two fed off of each other, the relationship away from the field, the nonstop banter to try and one-up each other both on the field and off the field, is actually something that I think works for both those pitchers. So they know they're blue chip prospects. They know they're highly touted, but the way that they just had this tenacious appetite to go back and forth with each other is something that I would kind of want to see follow through the next level or two. For me, the most enjoyable moment that I saw was two aces going back and forth with their respective starts. It was such a pleasure to broadcast.
I love it. And finally, name one guy you can't wait to see what 2020 holds for him.
Gil Kim. I'm going to go completely off the grid here. And the reason that I bring him up is he's a guy that obviously now has the cupboards restocked in certain ways, shapes, and forms. But there are some organizational philosophies that I saw this year that were really eyebrow raising. Pinch hitting, they don't do it. I mean, basically, Casey Candel finishes his lineup card, sits back and presses the red button and just watches the conveyor belt for 9 innings. That to me is something that organizationally I wouldn't want. I'd want to see guys face adversity. I'd want to have a guy that's hitting and maybe over three on the night, know that there's a guy on the bench who's knocking and might get that opportunity that after 2.5 hours comes into the game cold, maybe grabs himself a base hit. You got to get back to baseball. We're so immersed in analytic, and I understand it because that's the easy way for a guy to keep his job so long as the numbers line up with the ruler. But you've got to still play this game of baseball. And I think there's a lot of pressure right now on Gil Kim because there's a lot of prospects that are now back in this organization. And what are you going to do with them? What are you going to do to push these guys forward to make sure that this team is ready when, of course, that next influx comes through behind the Nate Pearsons and the TJ Zoits? So for me, I could sit here and rattle off some short season name and like a Philip Clark. But for me, I want to see what the guy at the head of the table is going to do with this organization as a whole, because to me, this season within the organization was a little bit flat, and outside of the odd no hitter in New Hampshire, there's a lot of work to be done and there's a lot of prospects there. So I'm real interested to see what he does to make sure the 2020 progresses upward.
Add Rob Fay on Twitter, the voice of the Vancouver Canadians, and a lot more. Rob, thank you very much.
Thanks for all your effort, Jesse. Take care.
Hey, have a beautiful offseason. And from Rob Fay with the Vancouver Canadians, we go to advanced rookie Zach Helden with the Appalachian League Bluefield Blue Jays. Here we go. List of questions. Question one, Zach, what was the story of your 2019?
I would think growth, Jesse. Bluefield Blue Jays, you know, didn't make the playoffs as a few of the teams in the farm system didn't this year. But, I feel like guys like David Schneider made a return trip to Bluefield, made some growth. Miggy Geraldo had a great year. B.K. Morris, his second return to Bluefield, I think was very, very good in his career advancement. And then you had a couple of guys like D.J. Daniels, Joseph Reyes, who had, sparks of athleticism. Those guys, got better as a year. And Spencer Horwitz, coming straight from Radford to Bluefield, had a tremendous year. And I think as an organization, Bluefield grew as a team. The wins and losses just weren't there, but every night you could see something that those guys had been working on in BP or extra work, and it had been paying off. And I think the guys at Bluefield got better as a team throughout the year.
Narrow it down, your position player and your pitcher of 2019.
Spencer Horwitz had a tremendous year, and before he was advanced, led almost he was in the top five of almost every offensive category, our average RBIs. And I think he ended up four behind who won the RBI title, was an Appalachian League All-Star. He had a tremendous year coming off the bus from Radford. He did not slack off from college. Joel Concepcion on the hill coming back from, his little time off. Came back in, had some great innings. Some nights he threw the ball really well. Didn't get enough run support, but I think Joel Concepcion is going to tread up the ladder pretty quickly. He's got some good stuff and a big kid. He's got some room for improvement, but I saw a lot of good stuff out of Joel and Spencer both this year at Bluefield.
Now, a moment from this year, any moment that you want to highlight that you would say, this is something that I've got to tell you about 2019.
Well, one of the things when I read your email this morning I was thinking about was the Greenville Reds series. Gookie Dawkins, his second year as Greenville Reds manager, was ejected last year at Bluefield, and I tried to get him on. He wouldn't come on. But this year he was ejected early in game one of the series, and the clubhouse, the visiting clubhouse at Bowen Field, and the back of the kitchen are right down the same hallway. And I got one of the part-time kids that said, go down and tell Gookie he can sit with me in the press box. And, about 2 innings later, Gookie had showered, changed into street clothes, and he was up with a beverage in his hand hanging out with me in the press box. And a back-and-forth banter
awesome.
With him. Like, he didn't have a headset on, but he was just sitting, chilling. And anytime a questionable call was to be made, you know, any manager has just been ejected from ballgame is going to disagree with it. He was fun to have in the press box. And I'm going to try to make that a thing. If someone gets ejected, I'm just going to invite them on up to the booth and see how long that'll go.
Give them Bobby Valentine fake glasses and a mustache if you want to as well.
Yes.
Name one guy that you can't wait to see what 2020 holds.
I'd go back to Spencer Horwitz. You know, he was advanced towards the end of the year. He and Miggy Geraldo both for the Blue Jays. But Spencer, he's a very smart kid out of college, and he had a tremendous year in the Appy League. We'll see if it carries over next year. I'm sure he's going to get some fall instruction and some spring instruction, and who knows where he'll end up next year. But it'll be fun. Very much like Alejandro Kirk was my guy last year. He had a tremendous year this year. I have a strong feeling about Spencer Horwitz. He's going to be at the top of the chain very soon for the Blue Jays. And Mr. Gil Kim is going to have his eye on him soon.
Hey, that sounds good with me. I look forward to potentially seeing Spencer with the Lansing Lugnuts next year. Zach Helden, Z_Helden on Twitter, the voice of the Bluefield Blue Jays, thank you very much for your 2019 contributions.
Jesse, as always, thanks to you, my man, and go Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah. Now let me bring in Adam Jaxa right now, and let's talk some Lansing Lugnuts baseball. Adam, let's begin with this, the story of the 2019 Lansing Lugnuts season.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of inconsistency with the pitching was the main standout to me. We saw great hitting and great performances at times with players that we saw in April and May, like a Jordan Groshans and Alejandro Kirk and Otto Lopez throughout the season as we continued on throughout the entire year. But Lansing just didn't find that consistency with pitching. Although they kept improving with the guys that had been there since opening day, it was a mix of a lot of the better talent this season. The guys that peaked here at Cooley Law School Stadium and with the Lugnuts, they got moved up pretty quickly to Dunedin. And once the new guys came in, there just wasn't that consistency that the Lugnuts needed in order to sneak into the playoffs at the end of 2019. So to me, a great offensive year, some terrific batting performances by the Lugnuts, but just inconsistency on the hill was the difference of them having a good year as opposed to a great year and getting into the playoffs.
Let's name a position player and a pitcher of the year, 2019. Who you got for Lansing?
Jesse, we got to go with our guy, Otto Lopez. I mean, you mentioned to me at the beginning of the year, before I had even watched this guy, you watched him at the Crosstown Showdown. He had come in and said, keep an eye on Otto Lopez, and you were dead on. So I'm going to give you credit for that. He wins the batting title in the Midwest League. I mean, he was fantastic. He hit .324. He had the most hits in the league, 145. A guy that didn't strike out much, 447 at-bats, only 63 strikeouts, 20 doubles, 5 triples, 5 homers, 50 driven in. And he was a lot of fun on the bases, 20 stolen bases. He was caught 15 times, but hey, who's counting? This guy was electric. And just a smooth, easy swing for Otto Lopez. There's no doubt in my mind this guy's going to be a major leaguer here in the next few years. He's just got that raw talent, that great hand-eye coordination, and it's going to take him a long way. So no doubt, I'm going to go with Otto Lopez. In the pitching department, I'm going to go with Marcus Reyes. I mean, this was a guy that you and I saw in April, and he struggled, whether it was the cold weather, whether it was adapting to the single-A level. Marcus just continued to get better and better, and there was a stretch throughout the middle of the year where he pitched over 20 scoreless half innings, and every time he was coming out onto the hill, it was effortless. These weren't lengthy half innings where he may walk a guy, he may give up a base hit. It was no. 1-2-3, strikeout, ground ball. Strikeout, fly ball. He was working quickly. He had a respectable ERA in the sub-2s. 56 strikeouts, just 18 walks. Opponents in the Midwest League batted under 250 against him. Really liked the growth of the 24-year-old Marcus Reyes. And let me give an honorable mention. If he would have stayed longer with the Lansing Lugnuts, I would have potentially, maybe we would have gone with this guy. But how about the climb for Joey Murray this year? A guy with that invisible that we saw him in Lansing. They got to see him in Dunedin, and he finishes the year in New Hampshire. And his ERA was under 4 in all spots. Dunedin, it was at its best, under 2. A strikeout-heavy guy. Doesn't throw a ton of velocity, but he's got great movement on his pitches. So I have to go Marcus Reyes because he was in Lansing all year, but Joey Murray, it was really fun to watch him climb throughout the organization in one season.
What was a memorable moment for you from 2019?
I got to go with the whistle ball game, right? I know you didn't get a chance to get out there and see that, but that was hilarious. It was a time where, you know, we're in the dead of the season. It's every single day. It's a grind, and you got to perform, and it's hot. And Dallas McPherson, the first-year manager of the Lugnuts, took advantage of a miracle field out in Lake County and said, let's go out, let's have some fun, let's play some wiffle ball before the game today. And it was the pitchers against the position players, and it wasn't close. The position players dominated, saw some home runs from Griffin Conine in a wiffle ball game outside of all the home runs he hit in the Midwest League. Otto Lopez did a home run. Johnny Aiello came out there with his big beard, his aviator sunglasses, his Lugnuts jersey unbuttoned in his cap. I mean, just some outstanding outfits. And the guys really had fun with it. So off the field, I would go with the wiffle ball game that they played in Lake County. On the field, I would have to say the golden cycle that we saw from Ryan Gold back in April against Dayton. That was really cool. Remember, Jesse, that was the purge night. So one half inning, people had the opportunity to go up to the concession stands. Everything was free. There was a siren that went off. It was the bottom of the sixth inning. So you had as long as that sixth inning lasted, and it was a long half inning, the longest half inning of the game, and it was capped off by a grand slam from Ryan Gold. So on the field, certainly, that was a really cool moment against the Dayton Dragons at Cooley Law School Stadium.
And then lastly, with Adam Jackson talking Lansing Lugnuts to wrap up 2019, name one guy you cannot wait to see what 2020 holds for him.
I'm very interested to hear what you think of this, Jesse, but I cannot wait to see the guy that we just got a sliver of what he could potentially do. And you know I'm talking about the 12th overall pick from a couple years ago. That'd be Jordan Groshans out of Magnolia, Texas. He was phenomenal. Another guy. We're talking about Otto Lopez, who just looks comfortable and it looks easy at the plate. Groshans, 19 years old. He only played 23 games, but he was batting up over .330. He had a couple of home runs. One of them was the most majestic shot maybe you and I saw all season. High flyer down the left field line at Cooley Law School Stadium. I can't wait to see what this guy does. Unfortunately, he got injured, had to miss the rest of the year, but the way that he played, and then he went down on the IL for a little bit, came right back, and he got right back into rhythm. Just a guy that looks comfortable, and if he continues to work on his defense, I think there's a high upside for Jordan Groshans. I'm really excited, one, to see where the Blue Jays put him in the organization to start 2020 next year, and two, to see if he can stay healthy for a full season and see how he does.
Adam Jaxa at Adam Jaxa on Twitter, who broadcasted Lansing Lugnuts game with me this entire season. Big thanks, Adam.
Jesse, thank you, and appreciate you doing this every single week. And I'm sad today that I'm not sitting a booth over doing this phone call with you because it means I don't get to see you today. But thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you soon.
We could create some weird, weird echoes. It's true. Big thanks to Adam. Now let's jump up to Double A and let me bring in the voice of the people, Tyler Murray with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Tyler, we begin with this. What was the 2019 story of your New Hampshire Fisher Cats season?
Well, Justin, it was the question of what the follow-up would be after the 2018 season with the three legacies, Guerrero, Biggio, and Bichette. What was the rest of the system looking like a year later? And the answer was pretty good. You know, we had some great pitching prospects, some really good yet streaky hitters in a lot of different departments. But the one guy who stood out was Nate Pearson, when he got called up, even though he was only throwing two innings or five innings for his first month or so, that really became the appointment viewing for Fisher Cats fans. So Pearson really stole the show for the better part of the season, watching him do his thing in the Futures game. And during that same week, I think Fisher Cats fans got just as big of a kick out of some of the highlights we had in New Hampshire as watching the home run derby with last year's manager, John Schneider, throwing to last year's near MVP next to Kevin Biggio, Vlad Jr. So it was definitely the most fun we've had in New Hampshire following along with our former players, and certainly some good times on the diamond in the Granite State too.
Let's award your 2019 players. Who is your position player of the year and who is your pitcher of the year?
Well, I talked with Tyler Zickel and Bob Lippman about this, a lot of different candidates. Bob's choice was Santiago Espinal, and I'm certainly okay with that. He was our only full-season All-Star this year. Again, he came over in the Steve Pierce trade last year. But Espinal just took a huge step forward in pretty much every department, and even though he started off a little slow in AAA Buffalo, he wound up, I think, hitting in the 300s for the rest of the year. So Espinal, for me, is just another guy who goes right into that conversation of the Blue Jays middle infield.
He was terrific.
Kevin Smith, month of July, at 333, top two in the league in both home runs and OPS. So if you take a cookie cutter and just take his July, it was tough to compare anybody with him. But I think I'm all right with Santiago Espinal being the top position player.
All right. So we've talked about the storyline. We've talked about the pitcher position player. Tyler, do you have a favorite moment from 2019?
We have a lot, and I've mentioned it several times, the June 8th walk-off steal of home from Santiago Espinal. It was 4-4, runner on third, two outs, two strikes, and he takes off, and the pitcher never gets the throwaway. So that was probably a singular moment that stands out for me. I just read your email. I thought you were looking for funny stories. So I will give you an instance that our fans know about. In New Hampshire, we have a game on the video board. It's called, you know, Name Famous New Hampshire Landmarks. And up here in New England, town names aren't really pronounced how they look. I don't really know why, but, you know, Worcester looks like Worcester. We've got a town in New Hampshire called Ware, which is spelled We Are, and there's a big famous lake called Lake Winnipesaukee. And just hearing Brooklyn, New York native Josh Palacios try to pronounce those on the video board, that was always a big hit and a great way to find out the personality of some of our players. And then Mike Mordecai, Fisher Cats manager, last home game of the year, he had already announced that he was going to be heading home to coach high school baseball and be with his family. He comes onto the radio broadcast for two whole innings, and I said, Morty, don't you got to get back to the dugout at some point? And he kept saying, what are they going to do, fire me? So that was a fun way to cap off the home season.
And then lastly, name one guy you cannot wait to see what 2020 holds for him.
Besides you, Jesse, I would say Riley Adams or Kevin Smith. Those two guys just have such raw, natural power that I don't know how much the AAA balls being similar to the big league balls is going to help guys' careers out, but we have just seen so many towering fly balls and hard hit balls either stay in the ballpark or get knocked down by the wind or somehow get caught off the bat of Riley Adams and Kevin Smith. Chad Spanberger, too, who was in the August Player of the Month balloting for the Eastern League just this past month. So excited to see what he's able to do. And for a pitcher, I'll give you Yency Diaz because, I mean, his last start of the year, he took a no-hitter into the seventh inning with two outs, and I thought on that day he had the stuff to go all the way. So if you get strike-throwing Yency Diaz next year, I think he's going to be just about as good as anyone you can think of in the Blue Jays system, with maybe the exception of a Nate Pearson. So Diaz, Spanberger, Smith, and Adams. So just about half the roster, Jesse, but I tried to narrow it down best I could.
I can't wait to see those sluggers up there with the AAA baseball. That'll be fun. By that, I mean the Major League Baseball. Tyler Murray at LT_Murray, the voice of the people. Big, big thanks to you.
Jesse, Adam said it was tough not being able to see you today. Well, I got it even tougher.
I never get to see you. So thank you for everything you've done, making this a great success each and every year. Fans listening out there, all of us kind of get credit for it, but please know that it is Jesse, the driving force behind all of this, and we're so lucky to have you in the system, my friend. Thanks again.
This is all Tyler, but thank you. And from Tyler Murray in AA, New Hampshire, let me bring in Pat Malacaro, the voice of the herd, AAA Buffalo. Pat, what was the story of your 2019 Bison season?
Well, I thought Bison manager Bobby Meacham put it really well the other day when we chatted for the final time. It was really the story of three different teams. The team that wasn't really good for the first 2 months of the year, the team that was playing a little bit over its head but was winning a lot of ball games in the middle part of the year, and a team that was just really darn good but ran out of time over the final third of the year. So this really was a story of three different teams. The team that we saw starting the year was not the same team that was in Buffalo by even the beginning of May. So there was a lot of transition, a lot of turnover, and a team that was pretty darn close to getting into the postseason for the first time in 14 years. Didn't quite finish the job, but made it fun down the stretch.
Who's your pitcher / position player of 2019?
Position player-wise, it's really a three-headed monster, but I'll give it to Socrates Brito because of all he did for the team, not only at the plate, in the field, but I thought the leadership that he brought to the team as well, in concert with a guy like Andy Burns, who back in the organization, we talked about his story about going to Korea for 2 years, coming back, and really in a role that he probably was not set up for going into the season. And going into the year, quite honestly, there were some questions of whether or not he'd be on the Bison's roster or where he'd be elsewhere in the Blue Jays organization. But he was a guy that found his way to AAA once again, put up very good numbers all year. And when we talk about the cohesiveness of the team, him, Socrates Brito, and then other guys around them were kind of the core nucleus of the veterans that showed some of the younger players how to fit into this roster. And then the other player, position player-wise, will be Patrick Kivlahan. We talk about the change over the roster from the first 2 months. He's a prime example of somebody that came to Buffalo, did not have success in Indianapolis because he couldn't find a spot, and came into the organization, spent about a week or two down in New Hampshire, came up to Buffalo, and just provided the offensive spark that the Bisons needed. Sure, there was a lot of offense this year anyways, but the Bisons were missing that pop, and adding 25 home runs to a Bison team that had not seen 25 in a couple of years was a big offensive spark. And then pitching-wise, it's hard to argue with Zach Jackson going 9-0 with the Bisons this year. You could make a conversation that Sean Morimondo, somebody whose season ended a little bit early because of an injury, the numbers, the record, the ERA might not be what you'd expect, but for a guy who basically scrapped everything he did from all he had known in baseball to changing it up to more of a cutter and using his off-speed stuff to go along with it, I think really shows what is possible, and hoping to see Sean back next year as well. So there's a lot of names in there, but Socrates Brito and Zach Jackson are two guys that really stand out among a field of several candidates.
With Pat Malacaro talking Buffalo Bisons, Pat, was there a memorable moment of your 2019?
Just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it's hard to not use the no-hitter by T.J. Zoik, the first in 22 years. The last one was Bartolo Colon, June 20th, 1997. Not that I remember that or anything. But you can't – there's nobody else that threw a complete game, non-inning no-hitter, I believe, in AAA baseball this year. It's something that is going away from the game. For better or worse, you just don't see it that often anymore. So it's a memory that I will remember. I think it's something we won't necessarily see for quite some time unless it's another 110, 115 pitch performance. So to go nine innings, throw a no-hitter, the historical significance for the Bisons franchise, and then just where baseball is now, where he was facing a team where Rochester, the Twins, do not want their starting pitchers to throw more than 85 pitches in a game, or they don't want them to go through the lineup three times. So if you're starting to see that out of teams that are successful, well, look at what Tampa Bay and the opener. Other teams are trying to adopt that now. So it's something in the minor leagues where we may see more of. So for the historical significance and just where pitching in general and protecting some of the young pitchers is going, it may not be something we see again for a while.
And lastly, name one guy that in 2020 you can't wait to see what it holds for him?
Nate Pearson, without question, getting a couple starts under his belt. Seeing the expectations and coming back from his injury last year, how dominant he was at the other levels, struggled a little bit in his last start, but got his first AAA victory. I'm excited to see what next year will bring. Kind of like I was looking forward to seeing what TJ Zoik was going to do this year with the Bisons. And it was a lat strain that kept him out for half the year. I hope TJ does not have any issues. Same with Nate, any of the pitchers. But I hope everybody makes it through spring healthy next year. And we get to see what 2020 will hold and what could possibly be a first major league call-up, because that probably is in the plan sooner rather than later. But the development of a 23-year-old and how he goes out and pitches and attacks AAA hitters who are veterans and really have a good approach at the plate. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Big Nate could do leading a Bison rotation that I'm really having high expectations, not knowing what the offseason will hold. But no matter what happens, there's high expectations going into next year.
All right. At PatWGR on Twitter, Pat Malacaro, the voice of the herd, such a pleasure to listen to how things have gone, even though you didn't make the playoffs, all the talent that you got to see, and then ascending up to the major leagues, more to come, especially led by Big Nate. Pat, thank you very much for the time that you gave this year.
Oh, likewise, Jesse, and as Tyler just said, you're the driving force behind Around the Nest, and hope folks understand the hard work you put into this. So it's greatly appreciated, I know, for myself and the listeners out there. So look forward to catching up with you again in next year, and hopefully the offseason treats you and the listeners well.
I'm grateful, Pat. Thank you. Pat Malacaro, the voice of the Buffalo Bisons, the Jays' AAA affiliates. Two interviews for you this week, the final week of 2019. And it's my thinking that who's the pitcher of the year for the organization? I think that Nate Pearson's a very good choice. But Jackson Reese was certainly a breakout star. And when you look at his final numbers, my goodness, what a 2019 campaign that he had. So here's Jim Terabocchia sitting down with Jackson Reese.
Right-handed pitcher Jackson Reese, who's having a tremendous year out of the bullpen for Dunedin, and really goes back to when he was with Lansing. He's joining us today on our Player Spotlight interview. Jackson, first off, can you describe for me how you feel your season has gone between the two levels this year?
I think they've been pretty good. I've been able to find my pitches pretty well and just mainly locate them for strikes. I see that when I am throwing everything for strikes, it's a lot harder for the hitters to, adjust to each pitch. And then when I am struggling a little bit, it's because one of those pitches are out of the zone.
Yeah, and you really haven't given up a run here in almost a month out of the bullpen. So how have you stayed so relaxed in the back end of the bullpen when you are in a hold or save type situation?
Really, I've just been trying not to think about it too much, just trying to keep my mind on something else instead of worrying about letting the runner score, just worrying about getting the next batter out. Because if I get the next batter out, most of the time, that runner is not going to score. So I've just been trying to keep my mind on something that's more important than worrying about myself giving up runs, instead of just focusing on getting the batter out, which will and then let the runner not score.
You know, you go back to your time in Lansing and now here with Advanced Day Dunedin, and you go over different things with two different pitching coaches. A lot of people don't understand really what the development process and the separation between the Class A and Advanced A levels really are. So for you, what have you tried to improve on most that has gotten you to this point where you are successful at both levels here in 2019?
I've been trying to make sure that I keep every pitch just more deceptive, I guess. I see that hitters here, they can see the breaking ball a little bit earlier. They can distinctively tell which pitch you're going to try and throw. They are a little bit better at like understanding what you're trying to do to them. And after that, then it's just all about making sure that you keep them off balance, keep them on their toes, make sure they don't know what's coming, make sure that maybe like the one time you're trying to throw a strike, it's right nibbling and you're trying to get that like swing and miss on a ball that's right off the edge. So that's been the biggest bump up in getting promoted.
You work with different catchers, obviously. You're not a starting pitcher, so you don't really know a day or two before who might be catching you. So you're working with Alejandro Kirk. You're working with Chris Beck. You've worked with Javi Hernandez this year. How do you work well, so well in tandem with them, each of those guys, coming out of the bullpen, which can't be an easy thing to do on a nightly basis.
Yeah, it's just about trusting them. They want me to succeed just as much as they want to succeed behind the plate. They really make sure that me and him are both on the same page. And I also try to, after every inning or after every couple innings, just try and talk to them and just go over like what the pitches I was throwing and how effective they were and maybe something we could have tried differently, and then go forward along with that and do maybe something different or just keep going what I've been doing.
There's meetings going on now with everybody, end of the year type meetings, and obviously you have some of them in spring training as well. How far do you think you've come in reaching your goals that were set for you in spring training to where you are now?
I think I've come a long way. I set pretty much one goal, which was to stay healthy, and fingers crossed that I continue to stay healthy until the end of the season. And after that, it was just kind of just playing for the fun of it. I mean, I'm a non-drafted free agent, so it's just play with everything I've got and don't look back and just have fun with it. So I think I've done everything that I've wanted to accomplish, and it's been a great year.
Right-handed pitcher Jackson Reese joining us here on our Player Spotlight. I want to touch on that next. You're undrafted free agent. You're with some guys littered throughout the clubhouse. They're top 10 round picks that are high signing bonus type guys, maybe on the international side of things. And then you have guys who were undrafted like yourself or late round draft selections. It's kind of an obvious type question, but is that a chip on your shoulder that you hold as you go throughout your professional career?
Definitely. It's something that, like, I think that just there was one time where I could have been drafted, and I take that to myself and I as a chip on my shoulder to just prove people that I could have been drafted and I could have been a good pick. And even though it didn't work out how it worked, I mean, everything works out for a reason. So, I mean, can't really blame anyone or look back on any differently because obviously I'm doing well and I'm here where I'm here. So doing all right.
You know, but a lot of times too, that chip on your shoulder for people, that can become, it becomes almost like their identity, especially for athletes. How do you prevent that from becoming your identity and just focus on, okay, I'm here now, I'm signed, whatever the case may be. You know, that was a while ago, but I'm here now, the advanced day level, I'm proving myself. I'm the, in a way, the de facto closer for this club here towards the tail end. How do you prevent that from overtaking you and just focusing on what's now really important?
Like I said, I just playing for the fun of it, not really trying to focus on the nitty-gritty stuff, just really focusing on helping my team, focusing on just whenever I'm getting my call, I'm doing my job, focusing on the next batter when I'm on the mound, and keeping that chip on my shoulder in the background but not making it evident to other people that I'm, like, trying to do anything different, just trying to be me, trying to go out there and do my best.
Right-handed pitcher Jackson Reese is joining us here on our Player Spotlight, and he's having an excellent year out of the bullpen, especially on the back end with Brad Wilson now gone to the Double-A level, Danny Jimenez. So looking ahead now to the postseason, obviously that, you know, the team is starting to really ramp up here, playing well here the last couple of weeks. What's the vibe like in the clubhouse right now? And getting all geared up for the postseason, because quite honestly, you guys are right now on the circuit one of the best teams going.
Yeah, we're just mainly trying to figure out who we're going to play. Other than that, we're just going to face whoever it is and going to try and give it our all, and obviously trying to win the whole thing is the number one goal, and hopefully we can do that and then enjoy our off season with a nice victory.
And also, too, I mean, winning the first half, could have easily taken the second half, I don't want to say off, but in a way, taking it easy. But a little bit of a struggle, sure, that happens. Mm-hmm. But you guys haven't really taken much, you haven't really taken much off time, I guess, so to speak. So how's the coaching staff for you guys kept you guys up getting ready to play every single day?
They've made sure that even though we all know that we've made playoffs, just to not let it up, because they mentioned that the last month of the season can really determine whether you have a great year or an average year, because you could be going good into that half, and then if you just take it off, your year could turn into a mediocre average year. But if you keep going, you'll have a great year. So I think the first half was about the team making the playoffs. Second half is about everyone doing their job, making sure that they end their season on a great note and hopefully go up from here next season and help the next team make to the playoffs.
One more thing I want to ask you, something I always wanted to ask you, too, on and off the record. Your debut was in Bradenton. You came in a pretty tough spot there. I mean, that was a game that Saturday night. You win that game, and you pretty much win the first half. You lose that game, things get maybe a little bit more dicey. You came in, tough situation there. Nick Allgaier left after an inning. It was a come-from-behind victory. Tough crowd that night. It was a big crowd in Lee Compton Park, always a tough place to play, at least to my experience there. So how did you keep the nerves so calm in that moment and pitch what was arguably the most important inning in that game?
I was just, like I'm always trying to do, just trying to focus on something else. At that point, it was much hotter than Lansing, so I was trying to keep myself cool off. So I was focusing on my pitches. I was focusing on my hydration, but mainly just focusing on just that next batter, like I've been mentioning before. Not really trying to, like, bring the situation to such a high situation where you just kind of get lost in that, just kind of making it so you understand what's happening, but not making sure that it's like over flooding your mind and making sure that you're like not making quality pitches because you're so dialed in on, if I make this pitch and it's bad, we lose. Just making sure that if I got to make this pitch and whatever happens, like I got to buckle down the next guy or whatever it happens to be, and it worked out pretty well.
All right, right-handed pitcher Jackson Reese joining us here on our Player Spotlight. Thanks for doing this, Jackson. Appreciate it, and good luck rest of the year.
All right, thank you.
And then one interview from the hitter's side, and it's going to be Griffin Conine, who had 22 home runs. He had a .576 slugging percentage. His offensive numbers were staggering in terms of the power that he showed with the Lansing Lugnuts, and I sat down with Griffin.
This is Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, joined by Lansing Lugnuts outfielder Griffin Conine. Griffin, is this year what you wanted it to be?
I'd say in some ways, yeah, in some ways, no. You know, I think if you think back to, like, I was talking about this with Tanner Kerwer, like, you think back to, you know, a few months ago, I was in extended, and Tanner was on the Phantom DL, that's where he started the year, and he was just saying, like, how if we had thought about how our seasons ended up at that time, we'd be like, ecstatic, because I was in extended, I didn't know how I was going to go jumping from that kind of pitching to, you know, an actual A-ball league that has actually really good pitching. So I was nervous, and I was hoping, like, you know, I just hope I don't, like, you know, completely bust and hit like 200 and all these things. And then now I get to the end of the year and I feel like it went well, but also at the same time, you know, you're left kind of feeling like you could have done a little bit better. And Tanner said the same thing about coming off the Phantom and being worried that, you know, he hasn't had that bat in months and he'd give anything to have finished hitting 250, which is where he's at right now. But now we get to this point and we're like, we kind of are wishing for more, that we would have done better. But, you know, I think it went well, all things considered, and I'm happy to have stayed healthy through it all, and just you know, obviously the power numbers showed up, which I'm happy with, but definitely things to work on moving forward.
I guess in that sense, it's a good thing. You can say, all right, in the off season, I'm motivated now for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not, you never want to lose that and feel like, you know, there's nowhere really to go from where you are, and or I guess, you know, if you have a solid year but you don't really know what specifically you need to work on, that must be tough. But yeah, I know I have some certain things in mind that'll make it easy to create a plan for the offseason.
Last year, I was reading your interview with MLB.com about the things you worked on last offseason to prepare for this year. How did you feel like those things went, the work that you put in this past offseason into this season?
I feel like certain things went well. You know, obviously needing the power to show up was the main focus, I think, and that has happened, which is good. But, you know, a side effect of that has been, you know, having an absurdly high strikeout percentage that, you know, obviously power hitters come with strikeouts. Everyone knows that. But you can always strike out less. You know, you can always make more contact. And that's probably going to be the ultimate goal for this upcoming offseason.
How much of the strikeouts can you say this is a work in progress? I shouldn't judge too much where I am. I should judge where I'm trying to go. And how much of that is something that you're like, I just need to conquer this right now?
I think it's a long process. You know, I think midway through this year, I realized that I would get really frustrated. And then at a certain point, I just realized that, like, you know, this is the season that I'm having. You know, and if it has to be the season I'm having, you know, with at least the power showing up well, and I can be happy with that. And you know, I got to a point where I was thinking of, you know, maybe changing my swing to a point where I could make contact more, and I kind of just, you know, I said that's kind of Hunter Mentz put it in a good way. He said, in a season, all you can do is kind of put a Band-Aid on something,
yeah,
metaphorically in your swing, and the off season is when you can really perform the surgery and really make a difference and make a change. And he was just up here last week and he said that to me, and that kind of resonated. But I think I was trying to put Band-Aids on things when really the time to work on it is in the off season. So I think in a way I just accepted it, that that's where I'm at right now. And definitely, you know, going to work with Hunter in the off season, Hunter Mentz, and see, you know, where I can go as far as making swing changes.
It's almost like the grades of high school, the grades of college, you and your understanding of your swing. How well do you understand your own swing right now?
I think, you know, it's obviously it's a work in progress. You know, you get to know it better every day, every game. And I think I know it pretty well, and I know when it doesn't feel good and why it doesn't feel good, you know, certain days. And that's half the battle, you know, and the next part of the battle is correcting, you know, the times it doesn't feel good, you know, before the games actually happen, which is one of the hardest things anyone has to do as a hitter. But that's, you know, something I'll try to focus on in the off season.
Was there a moment this year, a day this year, where everything just felt right?
Yeah, I'd probably say South Bend. The game in South Bend was just, BP felt really good, and I just had one offensive cue that I thought about that day, and then it just worked. It was one of those days where I felt like I knew every pitch they were throwing to me before they threw it. And then, you know, I hit everything pretty hard that day, and that day, and then the second game here in Dayton, both the 4-for-5 days, those are probably the two easiest days of hitting.
And the thing to do, though, we can't put you in a box. We can't just say hitting. Defense has been a lot of fun to watch. How's your defense feeling right now?
Not good. Not good, to be honest. You know, that's been probably the biggest disappointment for me on the season, just as far as the errors go. You know, I think obviously I'm a throw first outfielder. You know, I like to use my arm and you know, try to get outs that way, and that's shown up good at times, and then also as kind of let guys get extra bases sometimes. So that'll definitely be another emphasis in the off season of just you know, being able to hone in on keeping the ball like low and accurate, because I think most of the errors came on not necessarily errant throws, but like tough picks, like short hops, which,
yeah,
are when you're throwing like I am, like max effort, that could be a really hard play for an infielder, and you can't expect them to make that play. So that's probably another emphasis, is just maybe, you know, getting the throws to have a lower trajectory, because I feel like they can still, you know, get there quickly, even if I don't have to, you know, airmail it. So that's another emphasis.
With Griffin Conine, I know how good your relationship is with Tanner Kerwer. I see your relationship with Gabriel Moreno. Had you known him before playing with the Lansing Lugnuts?
Yeah, so he started in extended,
yeah,
and that's kind of where I met him in spring training, hadn't known him at all the year before. Kind of got to know him in spring training going into extended, and yeah, we just had a lot of fun. Before that, his English has gotten a lot better even since then. But I know Spanish pretty well from high school and college, so that's kind of how I got to talking to him, and he taught me some funny phrases in extended, and yeah, then I didn't see him for a month. He came up here and was doing really well, and then I came up here, and then we kind of just, you know, your relationship grew from there.
Have you enjoyed this clubhouse?
I love it. You know, this is a really, really good group of guys, really fun, which makes you know, makes the season so much easier, so much more fun when you got good chemistry with the guys. So it's been tough to watch a lot of these guys leave, you know, get moved up, which,
yeah,
obviously you're happy for them, but you know, like Nick Podkol, Reggie Pruitt, you know, all really good clubhouse guys, and got to go help Dunedin and move up, which is great for them. But at the same time, you know, that's you know, the team chemistry takes a hit in a way when those guys head out. But yeah, we had a lot of fun this year.
You're named Midwest League postseason All-Star at outfielder. What did that mean to you when you found out?
Yeah, that was huge honor. You know, I didn't know that. Obviously, they have the All-Star break. You know, I didn't know they did the postseason All-Stars, which is really cool. Same time, you know, you gotta wonder why, you know, Otto Lopez wouldn't be on that list. You know, he's most hits in the league. I'm going to win the batting title. So that's just a tough snub for, you know, a really good player. But, yeah, obviously very happy to have made it.
And lastly, Griffin, when the season ends, when all of your baseball responsibilities with the Blue Jays come to an end, what are your plans for this offseason?
Don't really have any, for sure. You know, I'm flying home, spend a little time at home for sure. And then, you know, who knows, definitely, you know, start a workout plan, you know, as soon as I can, start getting the body ready for next year. But take some trips, you know, go see Duke, so it's my buddies at Duke. And I'll be at home, I think, for most of the off season.
Griffin, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Lansing Lugnut. That was Griffin Conan, my interview with Griffin, the Port Chavez Young and the Bahamas. Big thanks to the minor leaguer, to Hayden Godfrey. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. Thanks to all the broadcasters for helping, and you to for listening in. We've enjoyed the baseball all year long. Until next year, this has been Around the Nest.